Well, hello there and welcome back to the Archaeology News Weekly. I am, as ever, David Connolly. And this news, of course, is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details in each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. Well, I all hope you had an enjoyable bank holiday. That's if you're in the UK, and if you're not in the UK, well, I hope you had a good weekend anyway. It was full of interest and good weather. I had a great time, actually, with both the Young Archaeologist Club and a taster session for archaeology students in adult learning, where we found, wait for it, yes, a tarmac road. Not any old tarmac road, though. It was a World War II tarmac road leading to some lost barracks. We didn't expect that one. But then that's the joys of archaeology. But we don't want to talk about World War II tarmac roads. Let's get back to the main headlines from around the world on prehistoric archaeology. Australian archaeologists study rock art at a secret site in Arnhem Land. A Paleolithic camp reveals the secrets of Scottish hunters after a report in the Archaeological Research and Progress Conference in Glasgow. An ancient cemetery is found in Iran, and in the Jordan Valley is it another cradle of civilization. A Bronze Age vessel, or should I say pot, is discovered in Macedonia, and a survey of 500 estate agents in the UK values Stonehenge at £51 million. Research yields younger age for the oldest Japanese stone tools, and the Cave of the Beasts hold clues to the dawn of Egyptian history. A dig in Anatolia reveals ancient prisons, and finally, missing ancient bones are returned in Ireland. Oh yes, you can't make that one up. Some of the world's top rock art archaeologists are seeking to uncover the heritage of the indigenous traditional owners of a remote part of the Northern Territory's Arnhem Land in Australia. The international team of archaeologists spent 10 days at a secret location on the West Arnhem Land Plateau, excavating a natural sandstone shelter which is covered in rock art depicting animals and mythological spirits. In addition, the team uncovered wooden and stone artefacts as well as animal bones. The site was found 3 years ago by the Joyne Association, who represents the area's traditional owners, and invited the archaeologists to conduct the dig. The team's leader, Bruno David of the Monash University, says that the finds are being analysed in laboratories in Victoria and elsewhere in New Zealand. The team were finding a large amount of charcoal, which suggested a number of fireplaces in the area. They also recovered ochre, which was used for the paintings, which they can now date from the associated charcoal using radiocarbon. It'll be at least 2 months, however, before these results are with us, and we hope to report on that as well. Alan Saville of National Museums of Scotland joined archaeologist Tam Ward at a national conference in Glasgow to discuss ongoing work at Holborn Farm, an ancient human campsite discovered by amateur enthusiasts in 2005. The discovery north of Bigger in South Lanarkshire, Scotland, is the oldest so far found and proves that humans lived in Scotland as long as 14,000 years ago. Initial estimates suggested stone tools at the scene were made in around 2000 BCE, but last year, as we reported, they were shown to be far older, making them the earliest signs of humanity so far discovered in Scotland. Now, experts have pieced together some of the life story of the humans who have used them. Alan Saville said that these early arrivals would have been physically similar to today's Scots, but with a markedly different lifestyle. To say from that, I'm guessing that they didn't eat deep-fried Mars bars. I'm allowed to say it, I'm Scottish. Anyway, they would have lived in small groups, and although it's virtually impossible to tell just how many used this site at one time, it was probably no more than half a dozen or so. Saville described the Holborn Farm site as a forward camp rather than as a base camp, suggesting it was a temporary home for a hunting party. Archaeologists are still debating how they would have used the stone and flint tools that were discovered. One of the $64,000 questions about this period, whether these small blunted points were used as tips and barbs of spears or arrows. The implements are about 4 centimetres in length, and as many as 40,000 fragments have been uncovered so far, so it appears that the hunters were making their own weapons at the campsite itself, and it may have been visited by several groups over a number of years. Saville cited similarities between their tools and others used for this purpose on the continent. In those days, Scotland's climate would have been similar to modern Scandinavia, but a mini ice age that began around 13,000 years ago sent temperatures plummeting for a 1,000-year period in the interim. This would have forced hunting parties and their prey back across the North Sea basin towards Denmark and Germany, meaning the humans who roamed Scotland 14,000 years ago were probably not the ancestors of the modern Scot. Savile says that the find in Scotland was slightly different in character to other sites in Yorkshire and southern England, and that there is more they had more in common with those in northern European countries. The absence of any discoveries in the north of England may point towards a buffer zone between two distinct populations of early nomads. Tam Ward, the amateur archaeologist who led the exploration of Holborn Farm, said that his group, the bigger Archaeological Trust, was turning up new sites every weekend. Well, I'm slightly jealous. I wish I could do that. Construction workers have stumbled upon an ancient cemetery in the southwestern city of Yasuj in Iran. The site has been found in the east of the city and dates back more than 3,000 years. The archaeologists will soon start excavations and then publish the findings of their study. Human skeletal remains were unearthed at the site along with arrowheads and ceramics. Archaeological finds in the northern Jordan Valley are forcing experts to rethink the pattern of the earliest civilizations. In Tabqat Fahil, 90 kilometers north of Amman, recent finds indicate that the ancient site of Pella may have been part of the cradle of civilization. Over the past five seasons, University of Sydney teams have been focusing on the early Bronze Age period between 3600 and 2800 BCE, a time when humans were formed went from smaller villages to larger towns and then to large-scale urban communities. When Australian and Jordanian teams began exploring early urbanisation in the Jordan Valley, many expected it to occur later and to be influenced by the burgeoning civilizations to the east and west. Findings of a city wall and other structures dating back to 3400 BCE and as early as 3600 BCE show that Pella was a formidable city-state at the same time Sumerian Iraq was taking place. With the unearthing of a fortified hilltop and large city walls on nearby Tal Hussein Hill, experts believe that the site of Pella was a city around 3200 to 3400 BCE, 500 years earlier than previously expected for the area. These are not just signs of a small city, but a megacity. Copper findings at Pella originating from Anatolia and Cyprus also indicate significant economic, social and political development at a time as early as Mesopotamia and predating the reign of Egyptian pharaohs. The discovery of Cypriot copper even leads experts to theorise that ancient Cyprus began exporting copper in 2,500 BCE, 300 years earlier than previously thought. However, 300 years later, in 2200 BCE, Bronze Age Pella civilization abruptly stopped. Pharaonic Egypt and Mesopotamia further developed into massive empires, so the question is, why didn't the Jordan Valley follow suit? Future surveys starting in 2011 will attempt to answer that question. The team theorised that a devastating earthquake combined with climate change may have contributed to slowing down development in the Jordan Valley. Also, as part of future excavations in Pella, Australian and Jordanian teams will attempt to locate an elusive Bronze Age palace, a structure expected to be similar to the palaces built west of the River Jordan during the same period. Some even hold out hope that the palace may yield one of the initial dreams of the Pella project when it was established some 30 years ago. A library of ancient clay tablets. Initial findings indicate that the palace probably dates back to around 1400 BCE, which would be the right time period for the text and libraries in the area. Well, I have to confess that I have myself happy memories of Pella when I worked there way back in the 90s. I actually even experienced my third earthquake there, which is very unsettling when you're trying to drink a cup of tea, I can tell you. A unique vessel from the mid-Bronze Age was discovered by archaeologists at the Sarevi Kuli site near the town of Strumica in eastern Macedonia. According to the archaeologists, these latest finds only confirm what previous discoveries have suggested, that Strumica was a significant centre during its existence, through which passed cultural influences from the north to the south and from the east to the west. on the southeastern slope of the site where in 2008 archaeologists concluded a prehistoric settlement existed, the team found richly decorated pots dating from the mid-Bronze Age. The recently discovered vessel dates, in fact, somewhere between 1800 and 1540 BCE. Now, our fabulous Stonehenge story of the week. Sell Stonehenge. A survey of 500 British estate agents has placed the price of an ancient stone circle at a cool £51 million. It's a drop in the ocean, though, to the £156 billion gap between British government income and expenditure. But I'll tell you what, it's a start. Okay, so we're not really advocating putting one of Britain's most prized historic monuments up for sale. Oh, how I dearly wish they would, though. The survey does shed light on just how much heritage sites are worth. But are the sums on Stonehenge correct? Shouldn't the internationally renowned, popular and iconic monument be worth a lot more? Counting just the 18 large standing stones, the 10 giant stones of the inner circle and the central altar stone at Stonehenge, we get to a very unscientific breakdown that the £51 million price tag on the Neolithic monument gives its 29 key constituent parts an approximate value of just £1.7 million apiece. Theoretically speaking, these figures at least suggest the total price tag should be a little bit higher. Surely a super wealthy antiquities collector would be prepared to pay megabucks to have a Stonehenge megalith transported to their living room. Or what about an entire trilithon framing their front door? What about admission fees as well? Stonehenge presently attracts around 900,000 visitors a year, and at an average price of about £5 a head, multiply that long-term, say, by 25 years, and that means the monument is worth over £112 million. Consider, too, that visitor figures will most likely increase in years to come, factor in some revenue from merchandising, oh, you have to have the museum shop, and £51 million begins to sound like a snip. Nigel Lewis, a property analyst at findaproperty.com, who ran the survey, commented that there was a surprising amount of agreement between the different agents we spoke to. Clearly, estate agents have done their sums too. They consider many different factors when it comes to judging the value of a property, its location, the age, and whether it needs some improvements. While Stonehenge doesn't lack for a good spot, situated on a sheep-nibbled rolling Wiltshire countryside, but at 4,500 years old, it could hardly be described as a new build. And while its state of repair is questionable to say the least, and then of course there's the ugly car park plonked right across the road since the 1960s, although we've heard that that will soon be removed. Also, unless Stonehenge's new owners were to scrap already scaled down plans for the new visitor centre, current cost £25 million, then there's a big chunk of change that they'll need to lay out for improvements. Someone buying a historic British monument, however, is not actually as ridiculous as it sounds. Missourian businessman Robert P. McCulloch, back in 1968, purchased the 19th century London Bridge, designed by engineer John Rennie. He purchased it for only $2 million, then shipped it across to the United States, where it was rebuilt across Lake Havasu in Arizona as a gateway to a mock English community. Just looking around just now, anything I can flog off as well. The tools were found at... Sorry, I'll actually try and start at the beginning of a story here. I just got carried away at the thought of trying to sell an Iron Age hill fort I can see from my window here. Last September, a team from Doshisha University in Kyoto, Japan, led by Kazuto Matsufuji, announced the discovery of 20 stone tools in a layer of earth dated around 120,000 years BP. The tools were found at the Sunabara remains in Uzumo. Before that find, the earliest date for stone artifacts in Japan was 90,000 years for tools from the Kanedori excavation in Iwate. At the recent meeting in Tokyo of the Japanese Archaeological Association, the Sunabara tools were estimated to be 70,000 to 120,000 years old. This new date was assigned because a layer of volcanic ash above the artifacts has now been dated to 70,000 years BP. It looks like ash and dates are becoming a bit of a theme in archaeology, if you remember last week's story about the footprints. And now, one that always brings a tear to my eye. The Cave of the Beasts, filled with prehistoric rock drawings of headless beasts and dancing figures, was discovered in 2002 by amateur archaeologists and is now being further studied by a German-led team of archaeologists. Situated in the Eastern Sahara, the cave is 10 kilometres from the Cave of the Swimmers, which you're first seen in, yes, Sniff the English Patient. But it has more and better preserved images. Spanning 18 metres wide and 6 metres high of visible artwork, a recent test dig has indicated more drawings 80 centimetres below the ground. Rudolf Cooper, an expert from Germany's Heinrich Barth Institute, says the depictions are at least 8,000 years old and may have been the work of hunter-gatherers whose descendants were among early settlers of the Nile Valley. The cave is 900 kilometres southwest of Cairo. It seems that the paintings in the Cave of the Beasts predate the introduction of domesticated animals, which mean that they predate 6000 BCE. With rainfall averaging just less than 2 millimetres a year, the Eastern Sahara is the world's largest warm and dry desert. However, in 8500 BCE, seasonal rainfall created a savanna which attracted hunter-gatherers. Rainfall in the area had ceased by 5,300 BCE and human settlements receded to the highland areas. By 3,500 BCE, settlements had disappeared completely and the movement away from this region corresponds with the rise of sedentary life along the Nile, giving rise to the pharaonic civilizations that we all know. Cooper's team have scanned the cave by laser to capture high-definition, three-dimensional images. Well, that is one worth Googling. Highly recommend that. Crime has never paid, and as far back as 4,000 years, in fact, according to Professor Fikri Kalakuglu, who is currently in charge of excavations at Kultepe in the Turkish town of Kayseri, the semi-arid highlands of Anatolia, which are considered to be the heartland of the region. He described the excavations so far as being very revealing. In a statement, he said that the work on Kultepe has revealed not only information about the lifestyles of the people living there thousands of years ago, but also new information about the penal system that was in place at the time. In the inscriptions that they've found, there were many terms used regarding going to prison, being released from prison, and facing punishment in prison. It's a significant indication that there were, yes, you guessed it, prisons in Anatolia at least 4,000 years ago. He also noted that since excavations began in 1948, close to 23,500 items have been discovered with written cuneiform script, which is believed to have been invented by the Sumerians. Cuneiform was subsequently adapted for writing in the Akkadian language, of which the Babylonian and Assyrian are dialects. The material that has been found currently is on display in the Kayseri Archaeological Museum as well as Ankara's Museum of Anatolian Civilizations. Two excellent museums which I can heartily recommend, but that is absolutely fascinating to find that level of sophistication of a legal system and having prisons instead of just chopping their heads off. And finally, here we are. Human remains taken from a site where they were recently discovered have been returned to the Donegal County Museum in Letterkenny in Ireland. Assistant curator Caroline Carr made an emotional appeal to the public for their safe return on the day preceding this. They were returned to Miss Carr at the museum by a TG4 reporter on behalf of an amateur archaeologist who wished to remain anonymous. You'll find out why. The men had become worried about the safety of their bones over the holiday weekend due to the visitors in the area and had removed them for safekeeping. Miss Carr had discovered the bones on the Friday but left them as they were, although happy and relieved to recover the bones, Miss Carr emphasised the importance of the discovery's surroundings in providing critical information about the individual whose remains were found there. She stressed that removing the bones and other objects from the site had essentially destroyed it, even though the actions were meant to be helpful. We would not urge anyone who has any concerns about the safety of a site to touch anything. Contact the police. And that this goes actually true for anywhere you are, whether you're in America, UK, France, Australia, Africa, you know, it doesn't matter, Asia, Europe, contact the police rather than take it into safekeeping. Miss Carr discovered the bone fragments believed to belong to a child or a young adult at a coastal quarry at the end of April. She was asked to investigate at the quarry by the National Museum after the remains of a female skeleton that could be up to 4,000 years old were discovered the previous week. While there, she found evidence of several possible sites that could yield more human remains. As Miss Carr was beginning to take photographs to document the site, she noticed bone fragments in a sandbank. They were photographed, GPSed, witnessed by the police, and left in situ. But when the team of archaeologists arrived back on Monday, they'd gone. Well, at least they have been recovered. But yes, please, if you actually do find something, especially human remains, don't touch. Get hold of an archaeologist, because you will actually destroy a lot of the information that could be recovered from that. And to lighten the mood slightly, of course, why don't you get your hands on the latest issue of Past Horizons magazine? You'll find that at www.pasthorizons.com/magazine. And I'll let you into a little bit of a sneaky peek that things will hopefully be changing over the rest of this year. And by 2011, you will be seeing one of the state-of-the-art interactive magazines on archaeology and heritage that it will be possible to find. And it's all free for you just now. So have a look at pasthorizons.com/magazine. Can I also remind people that there's many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as a UK heritage calendar, library guidance section, and so much more on Badger, www.bajr.org. And remember that more can always be found at Stonepages at news.stonepages.com. Thanks again for listening to the Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you'll return again to us next week.